Are you ready to get real? Welcome to Real Estate, the world's loneliest career, where you're always out of balance, unfulfilled, the role models are fake, the numbers unattainable, and you're just supposed to be and do it all. Join three self-made millionaire real estate agents, wives, moms, and business owners as we level up, learn from special guests, and elevate and disrupt an entire industry through real education our way.
Okay, we have some people watching, and we are going to discuss, I guess, Zillow round two, which is a little annoying that we're talking about this again, but it's literally all that anyone else is talking about. So I feel like
we're
going to go ahead and just talk about the things that everyone else wants to talk about. So last week, obviously, we were sitting here chatting about Zillow and their flipping business model, because last week the big news was they were, like, someone came out and said it looked like they lost maybe $550 million with their iBuyer program, and they also overpaid for 93% of the inventory that they had. And so last week we spent the whole hour sitting here talking about, like, how can that be sustainable? And are there other plans that maybe they have that makes this more sustainable? And within hours of jumping off of the live last Tuesday, the news came out that they're folding the whole program. So if anyone has not heard this news yet, which I would be pretty shocked if you hadn't, if you're in the real estate space, because it's the only thing that anyone's talking about. But basically, they were due to report to their shareholders their earnings for the year last week on Tuesday, and they ended up putting out a press release saying, we basically screwed up the iBuyer program. And we did not account for the volatility in the market, and our algorithm basically couldn't calculate the volatility in the market correctly. And so we are permanently shutting down the iBuyer program and laying off 25% of their entire staff right before the holidays, which is really sad and really nasty. And now they're sitting there holding what we know is approximately 7,000 houses across the United States that we don't know what they're going to do with. So last week they had said they were seeking basically, like, big volume institutional investors to come in and purchase those properties. And what do you think they're going to do with all those houses? So I wonder if I can put this up on the screen. But I did see, I don't think you can see it if I, like, hold up my phone, but I can send it to anyone if they want it. But a friend of mine was making an offer on a Zillow-owned property last week, and they received an email back from Zillow that said, "Hello, unfortunately, with everything going on with Zillow right now, we are pulling this property off the market and not moving forward with any offers." So I don't know how widespread that is, but it does seem like they're going to pull some of the inventory that they have on the market off the market.
But why? Why? When they actually have people that are willing to pay that, what's the goal behind it? Are they trying to force foreclosures or something?
I mean, I guess I don't know that. Like, my friend that was offering on that property that they said, hang on, wait, we're pulling it off the market. I guess I don't know if they made a full price offer or if they were trying to negotiate a deal, right? So I'm not sure. But I mean, part of me has wondered, like, will Opendoor and some of these other iBuyers now go in and buy a bunch of these properties? Like, I kind of wonder.
Not for what they're asking, probably. I mean, they're going to have to short sale them, I would assume.
Well, I think that's the biggest problem with all of this stuff that's happened for them, is Like, it's been very clear in the news that now they own a massive inventory. Last count last week said 7,000 properties across the entire United States at a loss, essentially, right? So like, it's been all over national news that they overbought these properties, and probably not all 7,000 of them, right? Like, I'm sure some of them are worth what they paid for them, or maybe even a little bit more. But like, I can't imagine any investor is going to come in and pay market price for them. And not even a buyer is going to come in and pay market price for them.
No, I think their goal was to have enough comps in one area to raise the value. And they just didn't wait it out long enough, I guess, or they forgot that pretty much every market in the United States slows down and house prices tend to level off in fall, winter. I don't know. I mean, that's what it seems like happened. But can you control a market or the market of the United States with 7,000 houses? No. Is it going to make any difference at all once they're all dropped into the market at once?
No, because if you go back and listen to our podcast a couple months ago, and granted, obviously numbers have changed since we talked about this a couple months ago, but like during the big talk about forbearance, when everyone was talking about how all the properties in forbearance were going to come on the market as soon as they let go of the forbearance stuff, and they were going to flood the market and they were going to crash the market, the numbers said that we are short like 3 million homes United States wise to bring us to a balanced market, not a buyer's market, because there's a big difference. And NAR says that 80% of all agents working in this market right now have been licensed less than 3 years. So that means that 80% of agents that are licensed right now don't even know what a balanced market is. A balanced market is not a buyer's market, right? Totally different. But the numbers had said a few months ago, we needed 3 to 4 million properties to come on the market United States wide to make a balanced market. And at that point, there were only 1.4 million homes in forbearance. And so everyone was even saying that isn't even enough to balance the market. Maybe it brings it down a smidge, but it's not going to balance the market, right? So no, 7,000 houses isn't going to do anything. We really need that inventory. It'd be great if they put it out in the market
at a decent price. Yeah, I mean, or just keep them as rentals. We need rental homes too.
We do. So the one thing that I feel like I've heard a lot of people saying is because Zillow owns all this data and Zillow is so smart and blah, 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 is there a crash coming? And that's the reason why Zillow stopped buying houses, because a crash is coming and they need to stop purchasing before the shit hits the fan and everything explodes.
So first of all, what causes a crash?
It could be a lot of things.
Okay. So what would happen if our market crashed, and what does that look like?
But that's the thing again, like I just said, okay, so 80% of all real estate agents working in the market right now have been licensed less than 3 years. They've never worked in a buyer's market. They've never worked in a balanced market. They certainly have never worked in a crash market.
Right.
We have a long way to go from a very extreme seller's market just down to a balanced market, then to a buyer's market, and then to a recession or a crash, right? Like a very long way to go. You know what's funny? When you asked like what causes the crash, my line to my clients for my, you know, forever since basically the last recession, when people are like, is my value going to hold? I've always said, well, barring any major world crisis, yes, it should. But we've just been through almost war. We've just been through, we're still in the middle of a pandemic. In fact, it's getting worse again. And we've just been through like the hardest 2 years in recorded history in a very, very, very long time. And we didn't crash. So, in order for a level of inventory to cause a crash, if we know we need 3 to 4 million houses just to balance, I'm going to say 6 to 10 million to cause a real crash.
But
that's not happening.
What I think caused the last crash was bad loans being written. Mm-hmm. And the last 2 years, it's probably been harder than ever to get any kind of loan approved. because there's so much more red tape. There's so many more overlays that weren't, you know, a few years ago. So they're really protecting against that kind of thing. So I don't think that that's what would cause this. Interest rates going way up or something. I don't see that happening.
They need to go up because that's what's going to help bring us to a balanced market.
Right. But I don't think that they're going up significantly at all. You know, I don't see that happening either. If it goes up, it'll be like a quarter point, which isn't, it just changes buying power. It doesn't, you know, change who's buying and who's not buying. It just changes the price of what people are purchasing. But I don't see anything changing. You know, I think it's going to still continue to grow at a 5% to 10% rate annually, like it has been. I just don't see where people are getting that. Just because Zillow pulled a whole bunch of money out doesn't mean that they are all knowing and they see everything. If they saw everything, why did they just lose all those billions of dollars? So, I mean, if their data was that accurate, wouldn't somebody have been like, hey, we probably shouldn't be buying all these houses for that amount of money because they're not going to be worth it in a few months. What if we waited until fall, winter, and then we bought them for asking or under asking, and then we had a whole bunch of equity? Wait a minute. We would be in the black and not in the red. That would be smarter, wouldn't it?
It kind of cracks me up what you just said too about lending guidelines, because yes, that very much played a massive part in what happened during the crash and recession. But like, agents want all the things, and it kind of makes me laugh because you can't say, oh my God, I don't want to crash, and then at the same time say, I hate lenders and appraisers because they're doing their job to make sure that the market doesn't crash, because that's exactly what they're doing. They're protecting against another crash.
Yeah, that's literally what their job is. You know, right. Lenders do not want chargebacks. You know, like, chargebacks are when, you know, people don't make their payments in the first 6 months and then they lose their commission. Like, they're not going to write loans for people that shouldn't be purchasing. They're going to be writing loans for people that are going to make their payments. It's a calculated risk. That's exactly what appraisers are doing. They're calculating a risk for the lender to make sure that they're, you know, backing a good loan, to make sure that people aren't, if foreclosures happen, that the bank's not going to be upside down. That's their job.
Correct. It's not going to be upside down. There's no crash coming. This is not 2008 where people had bad loans. There's still a lack of inventory and we're going to see appreciation, just not the race that we've seen. So what's interesting is Denver, all the economists in Denver say another 16 to 22% value increase by the end of 2022. So from January to December, a healthy, balanced market should escalate 3 to 5% yearly in equity. So they are saying we're going to have another absolutely insane year. I don't know what changes it. You know, it's really funny because we've all learned this new phrase that we never heard before, which is supply chain, right? And everyone on planet Earth right now, over the last 6 months to a year, has learned what supply chain means. It means that you can't get toilet paper. It means that your Gatorade is not at the gas station when you go to buy it, right? It means you can't find a car to purchase. It means we couldn't find lumber, and lumber prices are really high. It's the container ships that are sitting in the port cities that no one can unload, right? We're having this really giant bottleneck of supply chain issues. Housing was the first piece of the supply chain breaking down, really, because what we're seeing is a giant bottleneck from that 2007 to 2011 period, where we built 35 to 40% less homes than we should have built a year for that whole 7 year period. We don't have enough houses.
Well, and you and I were talking last night, and you know, something that I've been thinking about is what happens when, in a few years, when people are ready to buy houses that are currently in the job market, that are on unemployment, that haven't been working, are now wanting to buy or wanting to rent, and they can't get approved because they've had this lull in employment for the last 2 to 3 years. And now they have to wait another 2 years of gainful employment or something like that, that they can prove before they can buy. So will that slow down the market? I don't know. You know, will it bring other buyers out? Possibly. But I think that that's, I don't think that's a crash. I think that that's just something that might be a byproduct of what's going on in the country. Like, you know, because all of these companies have such a small amount of employees, which if somebody is way smarter than us that knows why no one is coming to work and why everyone is shut down and can't get enough people, like, please explain it to me, because I don't get it. I don't understand it and why it's now all of a sudden an issue. But I think that, you know, that's what I see coming. I see like an issue with people being able to get qualified in a couple years that are maybe a little bit younger, like entering the job force now, that instead of entering the job force have just decided not to because they didn't have a reason to.
Well, it's a super interesting point that you're making, because when the forbearance stuff came out, you know, there was a ton of coaching, I guess, I don't know what word to use. Like, people were very, you know, prominently all over the place saying forbearance sounds like a really great option. The fact that you could pause your mortgage for 6 months to a year, you know, but you need to know that not only at the end of that are they going to require you to bring that loan current or make like a balloon payment essentially to pay all those payments back, but that could affect you buying, right? Because people weren't thinking about that. They were just thinking, oh, I'll take a free 6 months to a year's worth of payments on my house. Well, you know, we found out really quickly people who initiated forbearance and didn't make their payments then could not go on to qualify to buy new homes. No one's really talking about what you're saying, which is if you've been sitting on unemployment for the last however long, that's going to affect your ability to get a loan too. You're not just going to be able to go to work on January 1st and then buy a property on January 2nd.
Right. So I think that that's what will probably slow down entry-level housing market. It might level off a little bit sooner than people think, but that's the only thing that I see. I don't see anything. Nothing is happening in the country that would make me think that we're going to have a crash.
John Jarvis says people that continue to wait for the bubble to burst are going to get priced out of the market. I mean, they're already priced out of the market. Like, what happened with the escalation in value over the last 12 months? Like, you know, I don't think that people realize, and maybe this is a conversation agents should be having. It's a tough conversation because it sounds really mean and aggressive, but the damage, finger quotes, that we did over the last 12 months with the way that property values went up so high could take decades to reverse, right? And so these kids or these people that priced themselves out this last year, it's only going to continue to get worse. It could be decades before they could buy again.
Or they just won't be able to buy and they'll be renters for the rest of their life. I mean, that's why we always say, when's the best time to buy a house?
Yesterday.
Either yesterday or 5 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. That's always going to be the same answer. You know, like, even if a quote unquote crash happened, how bad would it be, right? What if house prices went down $30,000? Oh God, guess what? You'd still be better off buying a house last year because that's how much our house prices went up in the meantime. And you'd be already paying down your mortgage instead of paying somebody else's. So,
I mean, Colorado, for example, like Denver's average sales price went from $350,000 to $725,000 in 4 years. Do you understand, in order for it to crash, it'd have to go down past $350,000. So we're talking about something that would cause a $500,000, $600,000 equity loss. I don't honestly know, short of like full-blown nuclear World War III, like what could cause that at this point, because if it was going to happen, it should have happened in 2020. And it only got worse.
Yep.
So no, I don't think it's crashing anytime
soon. So how do we get all of these people back to jobs? Like, is it just like a mindset thing for the younger generation? Is it everybody? Is it affecting everyone across all, you know, salary price points? Like, or is it maybe just, you know, the entry-level jobs that it's really being affected by? Because that's where I notice it, I guess. I noticed that there's a whole lot of people in the food industry that are not, you know, showing up to work or not wanting to work, or they can't hire them or whatever it is. Seems like a lot of people are going to work for Amazon though. Mm-hmm. So does that mean a change in our lifestyle? I mean, maybe. I buy a lot of stuff on Amazon because it's easy. Yeah, I mean,
this is what we were talking about last night. John said, I saw a sign that McDonald's starting wages is $18 an hour. No joke. And they can't staff them. And I, you know, like every time I talk to my roofer, my roofer's like, I can't get anyone to come to work. And my plumber's like, I can't get anyone to come to work. I have a buyer right now who's under contract on a new build with a production builder that typically takes 6 months to build. He's been under contract for 14 months, you guys, and they just framed last week. And it's like, they literally said they got stuck for 8 months because they couldn't get an electrician to show up to their job sites. Like, where are the workers?
Yeah, I mean, it's no longer going to be a supply chain issue. It's going to be a fabrication issue of said supply, because we don't have anybody to, you know, fabricate and, you know, machine the trees that we need to cut the lumber. So the lumber prices will go up, and it's not because we don't have enough lumber. It's because we don't have enough people to, you know, make it happen. Like, I don't know how you stop that cycle. I don't know if it's, you know, just, our kids are growing up in a different time where they're seeing all kinds of craziness happen. And, you know, how would have I reacted as 18-year-old me? Like, would have I just said, I'm going to sit home and collect $600+ a week and not work, or work under the table from my house instead of leaving my house? Or would I still go out and work at McDonald's for $18 an hour when by the time it's all said and done, I'm basically going to be making the same as if I just sat home and played Xbox for 4 days or 5 days? I don't know what I would do. But I think that that's part of the issue. I think we're creating a really bad habit for the future, for sure. And I don't know how to get the right people. It's really hard to find good people, not just anybody. Like, people will hire just bodies at this point, but like, how do you find the right people? So I think that's going to be a challenge for us as realtors to find really good assistants and grow our downline and all of that. And, you know, replace ourselves if we don't have anybody with the same work ethic, possibly.
Yeah, I don't know how we fix that. I mean, sometimes right now it kind of feels like, how many problems, or
yeah, right,
whatever. What else? How many fights can we fight at one time, right? You know, it's crazy. I wanted to share this article really quick that I found that I thought was really interesting, because we're talking about the crash, right? So if anyone wants this, I'll put the link into the chat box. Can you see that okay, Ange?
Yep.
So this is Steve Eisman, who's the Big Short guy, which if you've never seen The Big Short, you should go and watch that immediately, like this week or this weekend, because that will explain to you about what happened the last time around during the recession and why it's not the same thing right now. But he said, this was today, that Zillow has one of the most flawed business models he's ever seen in a very, very long time, he said. And he said that he would encourage anyone that he knows to go ahead and sell off their Zillow stock quickly, because he's convinced that the investor base behind the company doesn't have a clue as to what this business is really about. So I thought that was pretty interesting, coming from the guy who basically caused the entire recession by shorting things, to say that Zillow's not doing the right things.
So the rest of their business, though, as a brokerage and a lead source for agents, what are we seeing on that side? Are they picking up? Are they staying the same? Are people going to you know, start losing faith in that company as consumers, because they are still like the number one search engine for, you know, finding real estate, even though us as realtors know it's not, you know, always what it should be, accuracy wise.
I don't know if, I don't know that I feel like the consumer is going to lose much confidence in them.
Yeah. I think they do a good job of hiding what's really happening in the public eye. Mm-hmm. Realtors know what's happening, but the public doesn't see it.
I definitely don't think they're going away anytime sooner. You know, so the first thread of thinking that everyone seems to be talking about is like, which we just talked about, is a crash coming. And is that why Zillow is pulling out? No, we don't think so. The second line of thinking that everyone seems to be saying is like, they must have some even bigger, more nefarious plan that's coming up next. That wouldn't surprise me, because they have consistently been several steps ahead of the game for a very long time, and they are very smart. So I don't know what I think they will enter into next, or if this is all a part of some grander scheme or plan, but I
what I was thinking of the other day about this, I was thinking, what would they benefit if they got out of the market? What's the benefit to them? What if they were the bigger investors behind the Open Doors and the other iBuyer companies, and they were just freeing up some space for them to make their money back on that side, so they had less of competition? So as we all know, monopolies don't really apply to these large companies. They can really do whatever they want. So wouldn't that be the best way to get their money back?
Well, it is interesting because, like, what does the Open Door think that they do differently than Zillow, that they're going to continue and not, you know, have the same kind of problems? If anybody had the data and the wherewithal to do this correctly, it absolutely would have been Zillow.
Yeah.
Without question. But no, you know, I think every real estate agent, every Facebook group of real estate agents over the last like week has been absolutely flooded with all these people like cheering and hooraying that, you know, Zillow's going out of business. First of all, it's not cool that they're firing 25% of their staff right before the holidays. That's not fun to joke
about.
Not
just their staff. It's all the other people that support Zillow too, like all the other companies and all of their staff.
Correct. And second of all, they're not going out of business. Like that, you know, Zillow existed since 2013 without an iBuyer business. They've literally just been in the iBuyer business, what, like maybe 2 years? So they're not going anywhere, you guys. They're going to, you know, either they already had a plan that they're going to start on now, or they're going to go lick their chops and get it together and come out with something new. They're not going out of business.
Yeah. And if you're looking at this whole situation, like, if Zillow goes away, now I can all of a sudden be successful. You've done something very, very wrong in your business. They're just competition, just like any other agent in your market would be. So you need to figure out how to separate yourself and stand apart from the other people in your market, because it's just another agent. That's all you have to look at them as. So if they're taking up this much space in your head, you probably need to figure out a way to get rid of all of that and focus on how you're going to grow your business and not worry about what they're doing.
So on that note, I came up with a list of ways that we can capitalize on Zillow leaving the iBuyer market. So let's like talk about some of these things and brainstorm some other things, because there's opportunity in everything. And I think this is big opportunity. First of all, I think that every single agent on planet Earth right now should reach out to their entire sphere, everyone they know, and every past client they've ever had, and explain to their clients what the real market value of their property is, right? Because never before in history have people who own homes been probably more obsessed in general with what their house is worth, because it keeps going up and up and up and up and up, and it's shocking. Like, I mean, I've never watched the value of my own house, and I watch it like weekly now. So everyone is watching the value of their own properties, because it's literally like, oh my God, it can't get any higher, right? And also, it has been nonstop national news in the last week that Zillow doesn't know how to value a property. You should, and you should reach out to every single client that you have and every single person in your sphere, and you should give them a real value. And I would probably say that exactly in an email or a Facebook message or a text message or however you like to communicate with your people. I would say, hey, I'm sure that you've heard the national news about Zillow fumbling and having to pull out of their flipping business because they couldn't value a property. And I would like to show you the real market value of your property. And this is why you shouldn't be looking at the Zestimate, because they just proved that the Zestimate doesn't work. One of my very favorite tools on the planet is called HomeBot, HomeBot, and it's super cheap. It's like $25 a month, and you can put every client, everyone in your sphere, everybody in your neighborhood, whoever you can grab an email address for, on your HomeBot, and it will send them monthly like this really beautiful report with their value and all these charts and like information on what the market's doing and their neighborhood is doing. And then they can go into their HomeBot at any time and also look at their value if they wanted to. But it's branded to you. It's super cheap, like I said, for like $25 a month. And it's a really spectacular tool. So today, this week, I would reach out to all your past clients, your entire sphere, everyone that you know and can get an email for. And I would just say, let me show you what your real value is. I'm testing this new tool called Homebot. Use this to look at your value. Do not use Zillow. Zillow literally just shit the bed and prove to everybody that no one should be looking at the Zestimate on their website.
I like to, I might be the only one that does this because it's kind of messed up, but I like to go into Zillow and look at my own house and mess up their data intentionally. Because their values are so wrong, I like to make them even more wrong just so that people can see, like, you can change it. Like, it's not just data that's accurate. It's just any data that they're using. So I like to show people, like, the value of my house on Zillow could be $200,000. It could be $2 million. It depends on what I put into it. And they have no idea. So being able to show that to your clients, because I'm sure you monitor it just like we do all the time. I like to look at it just and I laugh because it gets emailed to me what my house is worth. I'm like, it's not even close. But I think that that's something that is really, really good for you to do with your clients, especially towards the end of the year where we are now, where you're going to be sending out Popeyes or doing some Popeyes. Why not include like a quick CMA with that? You're already going to be sending stuff to their house, add another, you know, paper or two in there and do a quick CMA for them. It takes you, what, 5-10 minutes just to give them an idea. And then you can start setting up appointments. So while everybody else is taking off the entire month of December, you should be setting those appointments for listings the whole month. This is an opportunity.
It's a huge opportunity. I mean, they literally just basically went public and said, like, we don't know how to do a realtor's job. So you should,
we should be thanking them.
Yeah, really, truly. Like, honestly, we should be thanking them. You should be going to your clients and say, I know how to do the job. Let me show you. Deb Henderson. Hi, Deb. I love Deb. Deb's in Florida on the Space Coast. She says, future foreclosure market, perhaps for them, it's easier to make sense of runaway pricing. At some point, their Zestimate just doesn't make logical sense. It doesn't make logical sense. I mean, you know, like speaking for myself this year, as we went into like the end of Q3 and into Q4, which always happens in Colorado, like it's all over the place. Like, you know, from the time that I do a listing presentation to the time that my clients put a house on the market in the end of Q3 and in Q4, like that value could change 15 times. Their Zestimate can't account for volatility in the market, but you can. So you should tell all your clients that.
Definitely. That's what you're for.
Mm-hmm. I also think it's a really big opportunity for, Aaron says, I love Deb Henderson too. We have love. Homegirls love today. It's a big opportunity to go after investment properties. So, you know, if you are an investor or you want to be an investor, one of the largest players in the market just got out of the market, right? So that creates a huge hole for people who like to buy and hold, which is buy rentals or buy and flip, or people who like to wholesale, right? So that's a great opportunity. And also, it's a great opportunity if you're not an investor, you're not ready to be an investor, for you to go and find investors, right? So for you to re-engage with anybody who's an investment buyer and try to represent them on the buy side, because you can go to them and let them know that one of the biggest investors in the market just got out of the market, which creates opportunity for them. You know, like it's, I think nobody's wanted to touch an investor buyer in a really, really long time. Because the market's so crazy, even for real buyers, to get anybody under a contract, let alone with somebody who's going to go in and try to make a deal on things. But there's a ton of really creative ways, I think, right now with Zillow out of the market that you could help your investor clients go get deals.
Yeah.
I mean, Deb says she thinks they sidelined the program until later. No way they're done with it. Yeah, I've kind of wondered this myself, too. I mean, they were pretty serious about saying we're done with it, including like we're laying off all this staff that facilitates that program. But I think they'll be back with something else. I agree.
Yeah, something else. Maybe not the same. Hopefully for them, not the same. Didn't really go well.
No, not so well. Okay, so one of the things that I love to do, and I was just in Phoenix for a mastermind and they were talking about what is it that the market really wants right now? And the reason that all of these iBuyer, Zillow, and Open Door and all these different programs have been successful in picking up properties is convenience. People want to know that they can sell their house quickly, that in most cases they don't have to do showings, and that they're going to be guaranteed a dollar amount. And so one of the things that I've always done is, did you know that you can send your seller clients guaranteed offers, which is really cool. So you can go to all your homeowners and all your people that you know that own properties, and you can essentially say, could I bring you a guaranteed offer? And you can do that two ways. If you have buyers that are looking that you know that would offer a certain dollar amount on that property, you can put them together if dual agency or transaction brokering is allowed in your market. Or you can run a CMA, and you have to be really, really sure that you know what the actual value of that property is. And then you can go to your clients, like I could go to Angela and say, Angela, if I guaranteed that I would bring you an offer at $450,000 and you only had to show the house 8 times, would you be willing to work with me? And I've never had a seller in my career out of hundreds of them that I've done this with for decades say no to that. And the way that I do that is I know for sure, without a shadow of a doubt, that I can sell Angela's house for $450,000. And I also know that it will take 8 showings to get there. In my market, it's really like 10 to 11 showings to get there. But I can go to her and say, I will guarantee you a guaranteed offer, just the way that Zillow or Open Door does it. And probably my offer is way higher than Zillow or Open Door would have been. But I can guarantee you $450,000. You only have to show the house 10 to 11 times. I know that to get to 10 to 11 showings is going to take 8 days. Go to a hotel on me for the first 3 of them, right? So you can make guaranteed offers to your clients. That makes them feel comfortable.
What do you do with your guaranteed offer? Like, do you say, like, if I can't provide that offer to you, here's what I will give you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just put it in my listing agreement that if I don't produce an offer of $450,000 within 8 days, that they can fire me.
Exactly.
No cost. They don't have to pay me back for any of the marketing, anything like that. If after that 8 days, they decide they want to continue, they're going to continue, by the way. Then, you know, no harm, no foul. They can pull the house off the market. But if you know your numbers well enough and you know your data well enough, which for the love of God, you guys, you should, because there is zero reason that Zillow should know your data and your numbers better than you, because that's why they win. But if you have a lock on your data and your numbers, you should be able to guarantee anything.
So I have a question. Mm-hmm. This just came up like in my crazy brain. What if you guaranteed a number, or you give them $1,000, or you give them whatever arbitrary number? Is that allowed? Are we allowed to do that?
Yes. Yeah. A lot of agents do that. I guarantee that I will sell it within whatever X amount of days, or I will buy it from you. And actually, that's a really sneaky way to backdoor investment properties. And that's the reason that those agents do it.
Yeah. That's
backwards from what I like to do. I like to guarantee my people a solid at market value or above market value offer that I know that I can commit to and make happen. Those guys are doing it because, like, again, same example, let's say the house is $450,000. They're going to say, I will guarantee that it sells within 8 days, or I will personally buy it. But they're going to say, but we're pricing it at 415. Okay. Because then they know that they just basically bought a $450,000 house for 415 if they can't sell it. And they're going to keep it as an investment property. They're going to wholesale it to someone else.
But isn't that then considered equity skimming? If you're representing the seller and your fiduciary duty is to the seller, and you're offering that much less for their property, and you know that market value is X. We have a couple of people in our market that do that. And you're like on really thin ice with that.
Yeah, there's a ton of agents out there that do that. I don't know the answer to that question. That's not something that I've ever done myself. And I don't think that that's something that you should be doing unless you have funding to actually go in and purchase properties. But mine is the opposite, right? Mine is basically just, I guarantee you that I can bring you this offer in X amount of days. because I know my numbers and I know my market, or you can fire me and pull the house off the market with, you know, zero recourse. Nothing happens. I do love, or I'll pay you $1,000. I don't know how that would work. We should do some research on that.
Yeah. I'll ask around.
We have to watch RASPA, obviously, real carefully. Uh-huh. Another thing that I think that everyone should be doing right now, I think that Zillow's given us a tremendous opportunity to start thinking about our businesses more carefully. I think that everyone should sit down like this week, this weekend, and audit their level of service, okay? Because there are reasons why people use iBuyers, and there are reasons why people will never use iBuyers. So I can't remember who was on our show at some point that said this, but someone, I love you, whoever guest it was, I'm apologizing for not remembering who it was, but someone said there will always be a market for a McDonald's hamburger, and there will always be a market for $100 steak house filet mignon, right? So there are reasons why people choose iBuyers, and that's typically convenience, right? Guaranteeing a price, being able to control when they get to move. That's a big part of it, because Zillow and Opendoor give them up to like 90 days after the contract is signed to be able to move out of the house and not having to show it. So that's convenience, right? So I would encourage everyone to sit down and audit their business and look at where they can inject more convenience, right? So I don't know, we could spitball a zillion ideas. Maybe that's like, oh, they have 3 showings tonight. Let me send them to dinner on me.
Yeah. I mean, this is a service industry. I think we forget that, right? Customer service is number one. And if you and your business can be replaced by Zillow, you need to change your business.
Correct. And the way that you do that, in my opinion, is by injecting more service and more convenience.
So what do you do? What are things that you do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, things that I do and things that I'm going to start doing. I mean, definitely, I think I send a cleaner, so I pay for, and listen, guys, the way that we run our business, it's all different, okay? Some people like to spend more money and have lower margins in order to give better service, and some people really like having higher margins and keeping more of their profit. And I'm not saying that you have to do any of these things, and I do believe that everything can be done really inexpensively. Like, I'm the queen of getting stuff for free or super cheap, right? So, I just think that the way that you're going to beat a computer that can offer the convenience of a guaranteed price and not having to show a property is by injecting more convenience and more white glove service into your own business. So,
and value.
Exactly. So I send a cleaning company that cleans the property the day before that it goes on the market. And then I send the clean crew back to clean the property for my clients during their moving process so that my clients aren't having to clean to put it on the market, and they're not having to clean to move out, because those are two horrible pieces in the property or parts in the process. I send boxes once we go under contract on a listing. So I have boxes that are branded with the Creed Group that have tape that's branded to me. I send a package of moving boxes to my clients once we go under contract on a listing. There's all kinds of things, but things that I'm going to start adding, I definitely think treating them to dinner is a good one while they're having showings, or maybe buying them movie tickets so that they have somewhere to go when they're moving for the weekend. I know, Angela, you do a lot of, talk to us about, you send them to hotels for the weekend, right?
I do. So usually on the Sunday before we start showings, I'll go in and stage the house for them. And I do have a home staging company. So if you're not in this market, I would talk to your home staging company, because something that I do for my agents outside of my brokerage is I will bill them at closing for the staging. I don't charge them up front. So then you don't have any excuse as to why you can't afford to stage a property for your seller. We're all on the same level playing field then. So ask your vendors if they'll do that. But I stage it on Sunday, professional photos on Tuesday. I pay for that. I pay for the staging. House goes live in the MLS typically Tuesday or Wednesday, no showings until Friday night. On Friday and Saturday night, I put them up in the hotel or Airbnb of their choosing anywhere in Colorado or wherever they want to go. And then I make sure that their pets are taken care of as well. I send a cleaner in the Friday before the showings. So right before Friday morning, the house gets cleaned. And then we come back on Sunday and typically we're going to be going over offers. But that's my process. And then I always like to send, just like you do, you send something to the sellers. I send something to the buyer's agent if I'm listing the house. Just because our market's crazy and working with buyers is not something that I want to do. That's just not the way that I run my business. I mean, I love buyers, but I'm not the best person to show them houses and work with them. I'm the best person to negotiate their purchase, but I'm not the best person to show them houses. So I make sure that I send something to the buyer's agent to thank them for doing all that legwork. Because I have such a good system in place for my listings, I'm not putting in as much work as maybe they might be. And so that's just a quick and easy reminder to them, like, hey, I see what you're doing and I appreciate it. Also, it makes my life a hell of a lot easier when I'm going through the transaction. You know, they're not going to be making my life hell because, you know, I mean, the one that we went under contract last night and I sent him two Nuggets tickets because I went on his Facebook page and I saw that he's a big Nuggets fan and that he hasn't been to a game this year. So as a quick thank you for writing a clean offer, you know, I just sent him some Nuggets tickets. Thank you. That's it. And I guarantee you, I'm not going to have any problems, knock on wood, throughout the rest of the contract with bullshit because he's thankful. And, you know, it's a great way to start that relationship. And I don't ever want to be the agent that everybody has a problem with, right? Like, I want people to have an easy transaction and spending, you know, a couple bucks to send the buyer's agent cookies or the buyer's cookies or the seller cookies, whatever. It's a small thing. Investment wise for you, but it's going to make your life so much easier and it's going to allow you to do so much more volume if that's what you want to do. But ultimately, making my life easier is my main goal and focus, for the next like 6 months.
So, and you can do it inexpensively. Like Angela and I definitely come from places where we could not always afford Nuggets tickets. Trust me. You know,
they're expensive. They're like $16 each for Christ's sake. Like, I'm not expensive.
Still the queen of, if you live in a place where all your sports teams are losing, you can get sports tickets very inexpensively.
Well, yeah.
By the way, a lot of your lenders and title companies, do not forget that you should lean on your vendor partners. A lot of your lenders and a lot of your title companies that can't contribute in certain ways towards marketing probably have boxes for your sports teams, or probably have things like memberships to Topgolf that maybe you can gift to people or use. So think about your vendor partners too. But I mean, I'm still the queen of the dollar store cards, greeting cards. Like, you can go to the dollar store for $1. You know, you can spend $20 and get 20 cards and you can just handwrite things and mail them to people. And people absolutely love that. I spend so much time handwriting cards. It's ridiculous. But I just think if you spend this time sitting down and auditing every deal you've had this year and think about every time your buyer or seller cried or yelled or was stressed or was angry or was frustrated or had any type of emotion, including the good ones, that is how you build a system around how to add more service to your business. Because, you know, if they're all crying because they have 15 showings on Saturday, then you should be doing something to figure out how to help them with their displacement during those 15 showings on Saturday. If they're all crying because they lost a house during the offer process, Zillow is never going to, a computer cannot emotionally connect with people. And this is an emotional connection business. So, you know, if they are very sad because they lost a house, which absolutely happens, figure out a way to help them feel something happy and give them something that keeps them wanting to move forward. If they're all losing their mind because they can't pick up the dog and the kid toys right before, you know, the photographer comes, then send a cleaner to help them. But if you look at all those places where emotions pop up in every transaction that you've had this year, I guarantee you will find places that you could beat a Zillow every single time by injecting more convenience and more emotional connection.
Yeah. I mean, you take every situation that you're in and figure out how you can level it up and how you can do it better. We're in an industry that is super stressful for people. We're just used to it for the most part at this point. We're kind of numb to it. But this whole industry is people with their hands out asking for something in return. And all you have to be to stand out is the person that gives back when everybody else is asking for something. and you're going to stand out as somebody that's completely different. And people are going to flock to you. And that's how you grow a referral-based business. And you don't have to, you know, be knocking on doors all the time, you know, unless you want to be. I mean, that's how I've built my entire business. I know Lindsay's very similar. Like, you know, that's all we've done is just a little bit more than everybody else. And it just looks like a lot more because the bar is set really low. And if you're competing against a computer program, it's not really a fair fight, right? If you've built your business differently.
And it doesn't, again, like I just want to keep stressing, it doesn't have to be like these big, ginormous brand gestures. It can be very inexpensive. I mean, in my career, I've babysat clients' children's many times, right? Like I've sat with their children billions of times in the car while the kids were sleeping so that they could go inside and look at the house. I've had the kids at my house so that husband and wife could sit down and review their offers together, right? Like every pain point for them in a transaction is an opportunity for us to step it up. And that's how we win, because a computer cannot do that. I don't even care if a computer does start spitting out gift certificates for them to go to dinner or for them to go to a hotel, right? Like, first of all, they're never going to do that. And second of all, they can't do it with emotional connection the way that we can. And
right,
it's an emotional connection job. That's how we win.
I mean, just recognize it's a stressful process. And what's something easy that you can do to help with stress? Like, go to your local, like, you know, support a small business and buy a bunch of bath bombs and send over a bath bomb and a card like, hey, congratulations on your offer. You know, hopefully tonight you can relax a little bit. Here's a bath bomb and a bottle of Moscato for $12. Like, who freaking cares what it is? Like, just do something.
Stop emailing them that the time is changing, because their clocks change on their own. Start supporting them where they actually need your support. And that's where you will charge whatever you want to charge for eternity, right? Like Ritz-Carlton charges an obscene amount of money for the same quality of bed sheets and curtains and mattresses and pools as every other hotel chain on the planet. But the reason that the Ritz-Carlton can charge five times what anyone else can is their service. It's unbelievable service. John Pugh, actually, we have this on our podcast. If anyone can't find it, let me know and I'll help you find it. But we did a class earlier this year, and John Pugh taught about creating raving fans. And he talks about this whole thing, like go to the luxury service providers, go to Mercedes or BMW or Audi and see how they run their dealership, right? Go to Ritz-Carlton and see how they run their hotel, and then pull little pieces of that back to you.
Yeah.
And make real service.
Yeah. Same thing when you go to a nicer restaurant that's more expensive. Like, there's a reason why you're willing to pay more. Why are you willing to pay more? What is it?
Good service.
Okay. Figure out what that is and how you can apply it to your business, and good figure out the agent that you want to be and be even better than that.
If anyone has any really awesome ideas about what they think is an opportunity that Zillow has created for us, or what they're going to do to level up their service game, we would love it if you guys would PM us or tag us in that comment on this post. I know that's definitely what I'm spending my week doing, is going back through everything and poking holes at where I can add more service. All of this stuff can and should be systematized so that you can do it quickly and easily, you know, without a lot of trouble. And I don't know, I never think it's a bad thing when something really crazy like this happens in our business, because I think it gives us a really big opportunity to look at what we can do better.
Something to talk about and another reason to reflect on what you have done and what's worked and what hasn't. So, I mean, I always, like right now is a time where I'm getting together all of my pot buys or whatever I'm going to mail out for Christmas time. I like to send those out on December 1st. So now I have X amount of days before then. So I need to figure out how I can quickly pop out a whole bunch of CMAs for my clients, or at least get them enough information to give them a range, because I want to send that along with their Christmas pop buy. Just because I'm already sending something, I might as well next level it, right? So if I can do that, I'm going to.
I would highly recommend Homebot, like I said, because that's a really super, very accurate tool that's branded to you. That's amazing. And it's so cheap. It's like $25 a month, and You can even do it with a lender or your title company to even get it cheaper, but that's a really, really good way to go to all of your clients and say, hey, here's your real market value. Stop looking at these stupid websites.
So is it just like a real AVM or something? Like, where do they pull the data from?
They actually pull it directly from your MLS. So it's like a very different type of market value. Usually when I do a home bot, what I do is send a CMA of mine along with it the first time. And then I just say to them, hey, I'm testing this new tool that's really cool. Would you guys be willing to help me look at it every month and see how you feel about your market value? Just to kind of get their buy-in on it. But I usually will send a CMA of mine first. It's just a set it and forget it. You don't have to generate that every single month by yourself. It's probably one of my very favorite real estate tools in general of all.
Cool. Homebot. I will look at that up.
Homebot.
Of course I don't use it.
All right, guys. Well, that was really fun. Thanks for joining us today. Deb, oh, sorry. I just saw Deb has a question. Deb asked, do you use RPR? I don't personally, I don't know why, to be honest with you, Deb. I know a lot of people use it and really love it, but I've never really used RPR. I think it probably comes from our MLS has adopted it now and like integrated it into their suite of tools. But for many, many years in my business, it was really expensive and I'm cheap and didn't always have the money to pay for it. But I know that like it's integrated for most people now. RPR is another really awesome resource that you can use too. It makes really beautiful CMAs that are really pretty and it is really graphically appealing to send to your clients. So RPR is another really good one. Awesome. Thank you guys. That was fun. We will see you guys next week. We love you all.
Bye.
Angela, Jessica, and Lindsay are in the top 1% of all realtors and would love to receive your real estate referrals in Colorado. Connect with the Homegirls on social media at The Real Homegirls Podcast.